Thank you very much for the invitation to come and make a presentation at this meeting. And what we usually do at such occasion is convey the message from the Secretary General of the Council of Europe, whose behalf I will be speaking today. And I'm really happy to find out that a lot of organizations are here, and that the structure of the meeting goes from the global, from United Nations systems to Council of Europe, 47 member states, then to the European Union, where you can find Europe, Greece, and Rome, and ERA as well. And then it goes to the national and local level. That sets a frame which we have to really keep in mind. And what is very important is that we should work together at all these levels, from global to local, and that the international organizations themselves should speak the same language. It's not only because often we are reminded of cost-effectiveness and efficiency, not double work, but it's also, and most importantly, because we need to convey the same messages. The countries in the area of fighting terrorism and violent extremism need guidance. It's an area that a lot of countries still have no practice or very little so. And so they're really looking, seeking guidance, and we should speak one and the same language from all these international fora and organizations. So as I said, it's very important to work together, and I will come to that several times. And it's not bad to repeat it all the time, that working together, multi-agency cooperation and approach, a multidisciplinary approach are very important in this area, like in many others, of course. And Philippe has said a lot of things that the Council of Europe conveys as message to the member states as well, but it's not bad to repeat them, so by repeating we can probably better remember and implement them afterwards. So I will say some of the standards and messages that Philippe conveyed to you already. And please bear with me, because this is an area of concern also for the Council of Europe, and not only for the committee and the directorate I'm here representing. They also see representatives, colleagues there, CDTH, that are here, other committees of the Council of Europe. So we are really concerned with this phenomenon, because fighting violent extremism is not a new fight, not a new area. But when it is related to Islamic fundamentalism, in this case, this is something new, and we need to find solutions full respect of human rights and liberties. Coming back to the topic, the Council of Europe, just to remind you, for the time being, only Belarus is not our member. We have 47 member states, and we are there since 1949. We have also five observer states, among which Canada, United States, and Japan, and Mexico. And the countries are represented by the Ministries of Foreign Affairs. We have permanent representations in Strasbourg. So all decisions that are taken, with political engagement and with, of course, a legal engagement in the case of binding legal instruments like conventions and protocols. But we also have quite a big set of recommendations. These are soft law legal texts, non-binding, but as long as the 47 member states have taken political engagement to implement this, they can of course vary in the level and wave implementation, the recommendations, but still the political engagement is there. So as the whole of Europe is concerned, you can imagine that this is a quite a vast legal area. And of course there is a varying degree of implementation and models of implementation of different norms that are developed. But luckily, we have a monitoring system, as you may know. The European Court of Human Rights, in the case of prison, this is the Committee for the Prevention of Torture. We have the Commissioner for Human Rights, the Parliamentary Assembly, their own monitoring mechanism, the Committee of Ministers as well. So there is a whole set of ways of insisting before the member states that they should implement what they have committed to. In the case of the prison area, the probation area, for the time being we have only recommendations. We don't have a binding legal instrument like a convention or a protocol. But still, the European prisoners are very much respected. The last version was adopted by the Committee of Ministers in 2006. And since then, there are numerous references by the Court of Human Rights in different cases and by the CPT in their reports. So that makes really upgrades the importance of the recommendation of the Committee of Ministers in which are contained the European prison rules. And this is a way of implementing them to a better extent than if it was really a non-binding legal instrument. So what we're going to discuss now today should be seen from the perspective of the European prison rules. And in the case of probation, we have probation rules, another recommendation to the Committee of Ministers, and because we're also going to speak about juveniles, we have European rules on juvenile offenders. And all these three texts are the mother texts in the different areas. Whatever is done in the area of fighting violent extremism and terrorism should be done in the framework of these mother texts. There shouldn't be an exception to the rules or to the protection of human rights when dealing with violent extremism. Coming to the next slide. In 2015, there was a Council of Europe Action Plan for fighting violent extremism and radicalization, which leads to terrorism. It was adopted at the 125th session of the Committee of Ministers in Brussels. And there were several activities that were provided and that have already taken place. It has two objectives, as I can see from the screen, to reinforce the legal framework and to prevent and fight through concrete measures in the public sector and in particular in schools and prisons and on the internet. We have a special committee dealing with terrorism, which is called Codex 10, and we expect the committee to adopt soon a counter-terrorism strategy for the coming 4 years. And so far, in implementation of the action plan, there was an additional protocol to the Convention on the Prevention of Terrorism, which was adopted and open for signature, and it has now 37 signatures and 7 ratifications. It was a protocol to the Convention to deal with the question of foreign terrorist fighters. Then, recently, was adopted the Convention on Offenses Related to Cultural Property, open for signature this year in Nicosia, and so far we have 7 signatures, and the member states plus Mexico. On the agenda currently is the topic of returning foreign terrorist fighters and terrorists acting alone, the role of private sectors in countering the use of internet and ICT for terrorist purposes. So all these areas, there is work being carried on. In implementation of this action plan, were also adopted guidelines for prison and probation services regarding radicalization and violent extremism. They were adopted last year by the Committee of Ministers. That means there is a political engagement by the 47 member states regarding the principles and standards and recommendations contained in this text. So this political commitment set some standards to be followed, and this is the legal framework in which was later on developed the handbook for the implementation of these guidelines. What is interesting about this work is that in the introductory part it says that prisons are often referred to as breeding grounds for terrorism, but this is an exaggeration because a lot of prisoners come already radicalized when they enter prison, and before even they come in contact with criminal law. So the family, the peer groups, internet, there are other sources of radicalization before a person enters prison. And that prison shouldn't be seen from perspective only of breeding ground for terrorism, but also from perspective of finding ways to disengage, to rehabilitate the person. So the root causes need to be sought, prevention needs to be done. This is most important. Work in schools, with internet providers, families, communities, guidelines is multi-agency approach. Here again, the involvement of society, which does not mean that the public authorities should pass on the responsibility of society, but really working together. It doesn't mean sparing costs for society to work in, to make it more cost-effective, but really working together. This is the main message. The guidelines contain three definitions only. As long as you know that there is no internationally accepted definition of terrorism, and it is not contained in this definition. It contains definitions of radicalization, violent extremism, and dynamic security, something that Philip already referred to. And radicalization is explained as a dynamic personal process, a gradual process of acceptance of extremism. For different reasons, it may be political, economic, personal, ideological. The reasons may be varied, and it is a process, internal process, a dynamic one. And violent extremism is to promote support or commit acts which may lead to terrorism. As you see, there is no need to achieve the end, but to promote support or to commit acts which may lead to terrorism. Dynamic security is something that we a lot debated. There were different views whether we should have this definition or not. And finally, we agreed on a definition in these guidelines because the staff, and especially frontline staff, is very important. Their role is very important. So there was a need to stress the human factor, and that is about dynamic security. So it's a concept of the working method, both of this, and staff prioritize the creation and maintenance of everyday communication and interaction with prisoners based on professional ethics. It should be taken together with other security types, like structural security, and it shouldn't be seen as the only way of dealing with prisoners, including violent extremists, but it is a very important factor because it contributes a lot to safety, to prison order, to intelligence in the case of violent extremists, and to rehabilitation and reintegration, of course. These definitions are important as long as they set the frame of the guidelines themselves. There was a lot of discussion about whether direct radicalization should be used or disengagement. In fact, the guidelines speak of disengagement. Later in the handbook, you can see also definition of deradicalization, but the guidelines themselves use the term direct radicalization because after a lot of debate, it was agreed that it is difficult to prove the deradicalization of a person. It is an internal issue. It's very difficult to be sure of the result. And it means that you really have to change beliefs, ideology, concepts, which is something very interiorized process and very personal one. So the most feasible and more detectable one is disengagement. So you're not dealing with the profound concepts and beliefs of a person, but you're dealing with behavior. You may still have some extreme ideas about society, but you should not use violence to achieve this. This is the idea of disengagement. And that is why it is used in the guidelines. The guidelines have basic principles, like in other consortium recommendations in the field of prison and probation. And they set really the frame for the rest of the text. And of course, they start with respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms, which is what the Council of Europe is there for. Respect for data protection and privacy, also very important. Also, a principle that we promote widely is that imprisonment should be a measure of really last resort. There are no other means of achieving the end of rehabilitating a person. And of course, good prison management is something very important, which is also underlined in the guidelines, because this is the essence of every success a person can have in reintegrating and rehabilitating, and at the same time, containing prisoners. So safety and security, reintegration, rehabilitation should go together, and that good prison management can deal away with prison conditions, bad prison conditions, and overcrowding. The basic principles, as I said, they put the framework. Also, another issue that is discussed is that overcrowding may lead to radicalization. It doesn't say that it will, in all cases, lead to radicalization, but it should be avoided because inhumane conditions and conditions that prisoners find unjust lead them to radicalize themselves while in prison. What is stressed in the guidelines is the importance of staff, frontline staff especially, those that are in everyday contact with prisoners, and they should be trained, they should be selected, they should be briefed, they should be debriefed, they should be protected against burnout, and the issue of reference staff, as Philip was referring to, someone that should be there for prison staff where they can go, they can convey their doubts, their fears, information, seek advice. There should be such a person, and even for prisoners, they could go there and speak to this person when they have some doubts about their co-prisoners. The role of religious representatives. In the prison rules, you have a rule about religious representatives, but here it's more developed in the guidelines, and their role, their vetting, the way they deal, their work, their importance are stressed upon in the guidelines. The guidelines also speak about mediators and about the need to ensure through care, about the need to ensure continuity of treatment after the person leaves the prison, and also the guidelines for the first time raise the issue of probation services. Because in so far the discussions were mostly centered on prisons, on prison staff. In fact, continuity of treatment, reintegration depends very much on the cooperation between prison and probation services. And also, probation services deal with offenders who are not entering prison altogether. After the guidelines were adopted, a year later was drafted the European Council of Europe Handbook, and I'm happy to say that Ron was there with us, and there was a lot of discussion about risk assessment, about the radicalization, disengagement again. The handbook is there to provide some practical advice to the prison and probation services. It's about both prison and probation services. It is there to give examples, to give some caution, and to develop further the guidelines within the framework that is set by them. One of the major messages you will find in the beginning is that radicalized offenders differ from one another. You cannot have a formula, a magic formula that can work with everyone. It is not possible because people are different. The reasons behind being radicalized or being involved with extremist offenders can be different. So you have to find, to profile them, to find their needs, their risks, what you should do with them. This is really individualized approach. You cannot deal with in the same manner with everybody. You have to find their motivations, their needs, their grievances, their personality, their environment, what their strengths and their vulnerabilities in order to deal with them. So first and foremost, you have to know whom you're dealing with before starting, because starting without this information can lead to negative effects in the long run. Another message is that there are already programs which are used, which are developed, which work with other offenders, either ordinary offenders or sometimes organized crime offenders or high-risk offenders. And these programs are already there, they have been developed, so there is no need to seek new ones. You can use these ones or adapt them to the violent offenders. And instead of investing in new, expensive researches or programs, in any occasion, there are very few such offenders, so You will be prone to mistakes at the beginning, but you should go on and you should seek ways to use methods that work, use resources, and target your resources on, as Philip was saying, there are different types of levels of radicalization. There are leaders, there are followers, there are opportunists, people who are there for money, and not because they are believers in what it causes for which they should fight. So you have to identify what is the reason why they're there and work accordingly with the person. And again, this handbook speaks a lot about the importance of staff and staffing issues, especially frontline staff. And as I said, it's based on the guidelines, but it also should be interpreted in line with the European prison rules and the probation rules. And what is in the handbook should be used by the member states in accordance with their specific legal and administrative system and with their specific needs, because some countries may have real problem with violent extremists, while in others there are very few or none at all. Now, when the handbook was drafted, the problem of returning foreign terrorist fighters was not so acute as it is now. So you will not find much about this specific group, although this is not a uniform group at all. But still, there are some issues that are related to returning foreign terrorist fighters, which are not dealt with in the handbook. And as this is an area that is really developing very rapidly, I would say that there is a need to look into this at some point. And the guidelines themselves and the handbook recommend that the issues are revised at some point, because the area is developing very fastly. And as you know, the foreign terrorist fighters returning back home, also some of them have committed crimes, others were probably there for other reasons, so little is known about them. Some of them will go in prison, some of them may not go to prison, so it is really another group which hasn't been examined in details in the handbook. The risk assessment is an area which is dealt with in the handbook at length, and the handbook recommends using special risk assessment tools that are specifically designed for violent extremists. There are several tools in Europe, used in Europe currently. Of course, it doesn't. It recommends also to use the risk assessment tools used for other prisoners as well, just to have a general idea about the offenders and the profile of the offenders. And if when using risk assessment tools usually used and you find that there is a problem, then use the special risk assessment tools for violent offenders. Not really use resources and staff to start doing risk assessment tools for violent offenders with every prisoner, but really targeted offenders, targeted prisoners, when you find that there is a problem. Another, I would say, area that hasn't been developed in depth in the handbook is the issue of women and juveniles. You can find some paragraphs about women and juveniles in the handbook, but as long as the number of women and juveniles in prisons who are radicalized or violent offenders is very, very small and information is lacking, the handbook didn't go in depth into analyzing the situation, apart from saying that there are specific groups that should be dealt with differently from male adult prisoners, and different interventions for juveniles and young adults should be sought and implemented. But there is also another issue on which the handbook is keeping silent: what to do with the children of violent extremist offenders. Do these children need to keep contact with their imprisoned parent, as is the right of every child, according to the Convention on the Rights of the Child? How do we deal with them? children, some of them, because child is from the age 0 to 18, some of these children may have experienced acts of violence when being abroad with their parents, or even participated in such acts of violence if they were above a certain age. So this also is an issue that will come to the agenda at some point, because it's important to strike a balance between keeping contact and family relations and protecting the child. And this also should be done on an individual basis in each case, and not have one method that can fit all. So one of the messages is, again, a handbook that bad prison conditions, non-respectful prisoners, inhuman and degraded treatment, overcrowding can be among the causes for or catalyzers for radicalization in prison. And also another message which we should remember is that excessive intervention can be as bad as lack of interventions altogether. So there should be some sense of judgment before starting an intervention, before deciding what to do with a specific prisoner in order not to achieve the opposite effect of what is sought. One of the chapters of the handbook speaks about managing rehabilitation, about what interventions, how they should be managed, how rehabilitation should be sought, about the focus of intervention, the approaches, the goals, about resistance, as I told you, disengagement, the radicalization. So this is the chapter where you can find all this. About information sharing and communication, very important. And about the specific groups of offenders. These interventions should be looked upon and planned to take a long time. They should not be a short-term intervention. You cannot change mentalities over a fortnight. So you have to aim to work with a person for months, sometimes years, and to work with a person when the person also leaves the prison, not sees treatment after the person leaves the prison. That is the role of mentors as well. The need to establish a sound, long-lasting relationship with a mentor, a person that can help disengage and reintegrate society in a positive manner. So the role of probation services, of social services, prison services, outside organizations, families with religious representatives, all these roles are there. And of course that means that if you want to work together, you need to share information, you need to share data by respecting personal life, private life and confidentiality of course. You need to involve families or other peer groups if the family is radicalized, and all this needs to be done with a dialogue between each other and exchanging advice, exchanging information constantly. The problem is that in practice, usually information flows one way to the police but not back, or to the intelligence service but not back, and this is a great problem. In theory, it should be both ways, but very often in practice it's one way only. And then, of course, interventions are undermined, information is lacking, and the results may not be as positive as expected. So this is a very important issue, the use of information, the exchange of information, the confidentiality matter, protection of data, and so on. Dynamic security is here again. And the fact that safety and security should be in balance with human rights, with freedoms. Here you can find also the issue of segregation or dispersal, like already discussed. And the handbook doesn't have an opinion whether they should be segregated or dispersed. But there is a table showing the positive and the negative aspects of both methods used. And of course it depends on the number of violent extremists, on whether you want to segregate the leader from the rest of the violent extremists and disperse the others. On a lot of considerations before taking a decision, and of course doesn't mean that once segregated, the person should remain always segregated. These methods should be, of course, changed over time, and risk assessment should be done at a regular basis, not only once, because people change in the course of their imprisonment. Also, the safety and security of violent extremists and of probation workers in the case of probation services is discussed. The role of the communities, the victims as well is discussed, and the police and the intelligence. And there is also a chapter on capacity building and on cost effectiveness. All this is in the handbook. As I said, it is a text that is there to help, not to give magic formula, and not to give fixed formula of success, of work, but there to be, as a reference document, to be used by the member states. In order to promote the guidelines and the handbook, there was a meeting in November last year in Strasbourg. It was a closed-door meeting because we wanted to be sure that people are there to discuss freely. And we targeted people that are dealing with violent extremists in prison and in probation services. So we had from each country two representatives, one of the prison service, one of the probation service. People were really very satisfied with this meeting because they had the opportunity to meet each other, to talk to each other, to network, to exchange ideas, concerns, bad and good practices. And it was also an important meeting to convey the message what they should be doing in the framework of the standards and principles the Council of Europe is there for. So all these, the guidelines and the handbook, and there is a summary of the discussions and the workshops that were held at this meeting, will soon be published this year and can be checked and can be downloaded, I suppose, from the website or bought from our internet library. What I want to say is that many meetings and conferences like this one, like our conference, exchanges and experience are being organized currently in different formats. UN format, Council of Europe format, European Union format, or regional or local format. And there are publications, there are researches, there are outcomes of interventions, they accumulate. So there is a lot of information. Despite the fact that this population of radicalized prisoners and offenders in general is rather small, and that it's difficult to do analysis, meta-analysis. But I think that the fact that the organizations like the France, EP, Europris, European Union are there and work the UNODC, work together, it's very positive. And I think we should continue doing this because we should continue sharing knowledge, sharing the messages, and using wisely what is already there, keeping track of the mistakes, of the things not to do, and communicating. Information should be shared not only nationally, but also internationally. This is also important. When speaking about information, there was also a concern expressed at this meeting that information is more easily shared at national level, but when it comes between national and local level, there is also a problem there. It's not only among agencies, but also among different levels in a country, how you share the information. Information sharing is really very important in this area in order to know what to do, how to assess the risks and the needs, and what measures and interventions should be taken. But if you have to retain two major messages from the interventions, mine and Philip's, is that working together, multi-agency approach, working really together between agencies, and information sharing and use are important, and the second major message is that anything, any measure that is taken should be taken within the framework of the standards and principles related to human rights and freedoms, related to prison ethics, professional ethics, because anything that goes out of this frame will lead to violent reactions from society, not only from prisoners. So we have to be very careful when making interventions in the sensitive area in order to really achieve a success. These are the two messages that I want to convey to you. Thank you.